You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up with all of your text messages and voicemails. We want to hear from you. We do mailbag every single Wednesday, so get your voicemails in, your text messages as well. Once again, 331-979-1369. Matt, what's going on? Welcome back from the weekend. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jordan. I had an awesome Sunday yesterday. I mean, we had Tiger Woods making a big push on a final Sunday round of the last major tournament of the summer. He shot a 64. That was his best Sunday at a major in his career. And he got a second place finish. He had like two putts that one rimmed at, one lipped out, and one was a millimeter away from rolling in. If he had sank that birdie in that par, we're talking about Tiger doing a playoff on a Sunday to win his first major in 10 years. Second place finish, still the best finish he has had in 9 years, I want to say. It was awesome. And then Sunday evening gets capped off with an insane night at Wrigley. Max Scherzer, Cole Hamels dueling on the mound for most of the night, and then the Cubs find themselves down 0-3 in the bottom of the ninth. Two outs, two strikes. The Cubs' newest phenom, David Bodie, steps to the plate and hits a ultimate grand slam walk-off. I mean, how does it get better than that for a sports Sunday in the middle of summer when there's not a whole lot going on? It was an awesome sports Sunday yesterday. I'm in a great mood today. Let's do it.
Yeah, I enjoyed Tiger Woods yesterday. Can't say the same thing about the Cubs, but
whatever.
Tiger Woods was very fun to watch. I think people started to give up on the opportunity that maybe just because he was getting back to Sunday didn't necessarily mean he was going to get anywhere close to finishing first. And yesterday was proving everybody basically wrong. So I think the excitement around Tiger, I think there's some golf fans that are a little bit salty that CBS basically made it the Tiger Tour yesterday, but who cares? Like, he was in contention to basically come back, and if he had won that championship, I think that would have been insanity as far as the golf fans go and just sports fans in general, too. So, very good Sunday, but if you
haters,
are...
man.
If you are a Cubs fan...
Nobody does to their sport what Tiger does to golf. If you don't like the fact that Tiger's in the hunt on a Sunday, then you're not a golf fan. Come on. There's nothing better.
So, not a lot of Bulls news, not a lot of NBA news going on right now this weekend. people are gearing up. Obviously, the NBA schedule, that was like the biggest thing that dropped on Friday. A full schedule. We've got the Bulls schedule as well. As well as ESPN dropped this article with some of their experts talking about the best and worst offseason acquisitions. The Bulls have and do indeed have one player on that list, so we'll get to that in a little bit. But I want to talk first about the NBA schedule, Matt, because I was telling you that I was going through the first 20 games of the season, thinking about back to last year where the Bulls started off 3-20, and you could even extend this out to 23 games. And I was telling you that I think through the first 20 games of this season, should everybody be healthy, that the Bulls could be 500. They could be 10-10 going into the first 20 games of the season. And if they do that, I think we're on a pretty good solid. We're in a pretty good solid place as far as what we would like to see from player development. Games are winning. The guys are winning games. Seems like the core is meshing a little bit. But you felt a little bit different than I did as far as the first 20 games or so go.
Yeah, I guess I would say a little bit different. You projected 10-10 through the first 20. I went through the schedule and I came out at about 6-14. So four fewer wins, four more losses. I'm guessing that by my count, I had losses to teams like Dallas, Phoenix, and Charlotte that you maybe didn't have, just because I think Dallas and Phoenix are both going to be better teams. And just because the Bulls are going to hopefully improve offensively this season does not mean that they're getting any better defensively. If anything, they might take a step back defensively this season compared to last season, which is not a good thing. And yeah, some of those other young rebuilding teams like Dallas and Phoenix aren't world beaters, but they can put up points. So I think that's probably where we differ right now, is some of those games that look like they're against some of the other worst teams in the league that I'm saying, that's not necessarily an automatic win for this Bulls team that's going to play no defense, especially early in the season.
Yeah, I think it's a tough stretch. I look at the stretch that the Bulls have right at the end of October going to the beginning of November, where they got to play Golden State, Denver, Indiana, and Houston all at home. That's going to be a tough stretch. It's going to be a tough week for Bulls fans. But yeah, I think you're right. I had them beating Charlotte back-to-back nights. Charlotte's a garbage team, man, and I got to be convinced that Charlotte can be any good this year. I know they flirted with 500 last year, but still, I'm just not convinced that Charlotte's a very good team. I think the Bulls can knock them off back-to-back there. Like you said with Dallas, I think Dallas is a good point, too. I was kind of stuck on those two early games that they're going to play, one away and one at home. I think it's all going to depend on how quickly that group meshes. If Doncic is still trying to figure things out, they added DeAndre Jordan as well, so we'll see. That might be like one of those toss-up games. I was back and forth about Detroit as well. That was kind of a toss-up game for me. Same thing with New Orleans. I know as good as we thought New Orleans was last year, the Bulls played them really well all season last year, so that might be a toss-up game. I had them losing that one too on the road. But there are a few teams and a few games in here where I think the Bulls can be in these games. Like I told you last week, I felt like the Bulls were in a lot more games than initially expected. So looking at the schedule, if they go 6-14 like you have them projected, I don't think that's a very good start. And I think there's going to be some rumblings if we're in the middle of November, almost at the end of November, and this team is 6-14 with the talent that we have right now and what we're expecting from them. I don't think that necessarily looks very good for Fred Hoiberg or some of these guys like Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker and even Markkanen and Dunn. Like, those guys are out to prove something, and they're going to have to prove something early to make sure that this works. And the Bulls aren't at a point where they either have to decide they need to lose or they need to continue to just run this thing out there. So 6-14, how do you feel the fan base reacts to that?
It depends, because I think the fan base is split right now on what they want to see from the Bulls next season. I think some of the fan base wants them to be competitive and believes that they can be competitive in a weak Eastern Conference and challenge for somewhere like the 6th through the 8th seed. I don't know if I'm buying that yet, and I would put myself in the faction of fans who think it would be in their best interest to get back to the lottery next season, especially with the new way that the odds are shaking out in the 2019 lottery and some of the premier talent that's projected to be at the top of that draft class, and it is not going to be as deep of a draft class as the one we just saw. So if they start 6-14, I think some fans are going to be happy and some fans that are hoping for the playoffs are going to be kind of ticked off. And let me just say this, 6-14 and 10-10 through the first 20 is not like a gigantic difference. Maybe it's a matter of losing a couple of close games instead of winning a couple of close games. And last season, when the Bulls started 3-20, We saw plenty of that on a team that was struggling to find the guy who could close games for them. And now we are hoping, coming into this season with a healthy LaVine and a healthy Dunn and a healthy Markkanen and a healthy Jabari Parker, that they're going to have all sorts of options as far as who could be that guy to close a close game for them late in the fourth quarter. We'll see. I'm just saying, and I'm not trying to be a hater with that 6-14 prediction through their first 20 games. I'm saying show me something. This is going to be a different team than the one we started with last season. Different lineup. We kind of touched on that in one of our mailbag topics last week. This starting five, totally different than last season. But so we have nothing to base it off of. Other than on paper, it looks like a collection of promising young talent. But show me something. Before I predict that that team can start playing 500 basketball through the first 20 games of a season, they got to show me something. And that's why I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt in any of those games I looked at on the schedule to say that game's a toss-up. I leaned towards a loss instead of a win. And that's just the way I decided to look at that.
If you take your projection and you multiply it by four by the entire NBA schedule, and obviously it's not going to shake out that way. The strength of schedule is a little bit different, but you're hanging around 24 wins. If you multiply that by four, you've got 24 and whatever. I'm looking at the Bulls' schedule just in 2018, leading up to the new year. The Bulls have a pretty damn hard schedule, I think, for the first 2.5 months of the season. I'm looking at a lot of teams compared to their second half. A lot of these teams, we're talking about borderline fringe playoff teams all the way up to top three, top four in both the Eastern and the Western Conference. You're looking at having to play Houston twice. You're looking at having to play Milwaukee twice. You're having to play Boston twice. You have to play Golden State early on. You have to play Indiana a couple times. You have to play Denver twice. Like, these are all teams that I think are way better than
the Bulls. Oklahoma City twice.
Yep, Oklahoma City twice.
Minnesota twice.
Washington twice as well. So you're looking at a lot of teams that are fringe playoff teams all the way up to teams that are probably going to be anywhere between 42 and 50 wins next year, if not more than that.
And then you start 2019 January. Okay, you have a couple of home games, but then starting January 9th, you have your longest road game or road trip of the season, because remember, they did away with the circus trip in November. So starting January 9th, five-game road trip at Portland, at Golden State, at Utah, at LeBron and the Lakers. Oh, and then at Denver. So, yeesh. Doesn't get any easier to start the year.
Yeah, that's a tough stretch. I'm looking right after that, though. If you go deep into January, early February, I think they have an opportunity to kind of flip that on its head. You're at Cleveland, then you're at home for Atlanta, the Clippers, Cleveland again, and then you go on the road to Brooklyn, Miami, Charlotte, and then finish up in New Orleans. Like, that right there to me says there's a lot of games in there the Bulls, I think, can win. You look at that, that's, what, six games? I think the Bulls could be 5-1 in that streak, but then you flip it on its head a week and a half before that, and they could be 0-5 on that road trip.
What's the one loss you're giving them there? At Miami or home against the Pelicans?
It's either at Miami or maybe at home against the Clippers. I think the Clippers are going to be better than advertised. Yeah, probably maybe and New Orleans too. I mean, you could look at that game as well, and that'll be Nico's homecoming as well too.
Giving them two wins on the road and at home against Cleveland. That's tough, man. Look, I know Cleveland's not going to be what they were without LeBron, but I don't know. Beating a team twice in the span of 1 week, it's not easy to do.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's true. And the only team that I have them doing that against is Charlotte, and that's early on in the season. I'm still just not bought into that team. I think the Bulls can scrape Charlotte this year. Same thing with Orlando. The Bulls are going to just need to pick up the wins that they have. Like, if they are really wanting to be competitive, they've got to pick up the wins against Orlando. They got to pick up wins against Charlotte. I think the more interesting way to look at this is look at the teams that maybe are more similar to the Bulls, and those are the games that the Bulls are really going to have to win. If they want this to be a competitive, yeah, you know what, we're better than advertised this season, that's talking about games against Brooklyn, games against Detroit, games against, like I said, Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I think Cleveland's a little bit better than the Bulls are right now. Games against Miami, I think they hang around there too as well. Washington is the same thing. Like, all of those teams, like, packed together between 7 and 11 in the Eastern Conference, the Bulls are going to have to pick up the majority of the wins against those. Those teams, if they lose the majority of those games, that's where I'll be really pissed off. if they're losing against teams like the Lakers and the Utah Jazz and the Golden State Warriors and Boston, like, that's fine. Like, I know that the Bulls are completely out of the realm of those types of teams, top three teams in their conference, respectively. Where I want the Bulls winning their games is between teams 7-11 or worse than 11th in their conference.
See, and that's funny, Jordan, because I look at that and I say, as a guy who thinks the Bulls should be in the lottery again next year, those are the teams I don't want the Bulls beating. Like, yeah, it's a good sign if your young core is winning games against other teams that are bad and rebuilding, because it means in some degree or in some fashion you're ahead of them in your rebuild, or that you're looking better than they are. But I'm saying that's what cost the Bulls a top three, top five pick last year, because they had so many wins against those other tanking teams that were tanking more successfully. So you say you want the Bulls to be winning those games, and it's understandable if they lose to better competition. I understand your logic. As someone who thinks the Bulls should be back in the lottery, I want them to lose those games. And it sucks to have to say that, but that's the truth of the matter. Especially, you look at their March schedule, which is, maybe the Bulls are kind of in the hunt for a playoff spot coming into March, and then, you know, the back end of the season, maybe they're not. If they are, you got a home and away against the Hawks, you got a home and away against the Pistons, you got Sacramento, and you got Phoenix. And then you got, Sacramento and Phoenix. Like, those could be six games against teams on their way to the lottery. And if the Bulls win the majority of those games, maybe they sneak in as an 8 seed. If they lose the majority of those games, maybe they find themselves with better odds in the lottery. It's going to go one of two ways there.
So do you think the Bulls need to be in the top five of the lottery next season? Because I just don't think that's a possibility at all. Like, I think this team's way too good to be a top five a bottom five team in this league and be in the top five in the lottery next season. And especially looking at next year's draft class, like, reading up on their draft class, it's nowhere near as good as this draft class is. You've got to keep that in mind as well. It's like, okay, yeah, it's nice to be in the lottery, but if the lottery isn't good, if we're looking at, like, a lottery, a draft that was 2014, which was absolutely garbage outside of, like, three or four guys, and most of those guys that ended up popping weren't guys that were taken in the lottery either. That was the year that Noah Vonleh went and Frank Kaminsky went in the top 10. Like, if we have a draft class like that coming up next year, and some of the major names next year are going to go are Zion Williamson, are RJ Barrett from Duke, Romeo Langford, and then outside of that class, I'm missing a few guys too off the top of my head, but outside of those guys, this draft class becomes very, very weak. It's a very top-heavy 2019 draft class. And so what I'm saying is I don't necessarily need the Bulls to be a playoff team at all, because that's fine. Even if they end up somewhere between the 9th and the 12th seed in the Eastern Conference, that's fine. But winning games and finding some type of chemistry among Dunn, LaVine, Markkanen, Carter, and Parker are all number one on my list. That's number one. So if they're winning games against teams that, you know, are hanging between 7 and 11, like I said, Brooklyn, Charlotte, any of those teams in the East, I'd rather see them win those games, because it's going to build more chemistry. And that means, to me, that means one of a few things is happening. Markkanen's developing the way we want to see him. LaVine is doing the same. Parker's doing that. Dunn, Carter. If they're losing a lot of these games, I feel tension starts to rise in this team. The chemistry isn't there, or the player development, like, we want it to be there. So I'd rather see them play slightly better than advertised and maybe end up between 11 and 14 in the lottery, rather than this thing to be a complete dumpster fire next year and we go into next offseason and we're looking at each other like,
okay,
man, we didn't see anything.
I get that, Joe. I'll cede that point to you, and I think it's a legit point to make, that you'd rather see the young development of this core, which leads to wins, than you would to see them tank. But I guess I'll kind of adjust my commentary this way. Say the Bulls, and I kind of said it already, but if the Bulls are borderline competitive, like, on the outside looking in come March 1st, when you're talking about the East and the playoff picture, say they are somewhere a handful of games below 500 and five or six games out of the eighth and final playoff spot. In that scenario, would you rather see them lose the majority of their games to finish the season and get a higher percentage in the new lottery odds of 2019, where top three have an even 14% chance across the board, fourth, 12.5%, an increase from last year, five, 10.5%, increase from last year? Like, or would rather see them rally together, get their way to the eighth seed, and lose in the first round, probably getting swept? Like, which of those do you think is better for the team moving forward for 2019-2020? Because to me, it's losing the majority of those games, making your way down to a high lottery pick once again. Like, otherwise, you're just on your way to being a one-and-done playoff team.
My only question for you there, and here I'll answer that real quick, just looking at the March schedule and, like, maybe the final 5 weeks of the season, the Bulls have a really, really, really tough schedule. Look, you're playing the Lakers once, you're playing Washington twice, you're playing Philadelphia twice, you're playing New York twice, which I think New York is a team that I don't necessarily know what they're going to be either, if they're going to be better than we think that they are. If Kristaps comes back and Kevin Knox looks good and some of the other guys that they have too, you're playing Toronto.
Toronto twice.
You're playing Utah, you're playing Portland. Like, the Bulls have a really, really, really difficult March. So I'm looking at their March and saying, okay, if we're hanging around the 8th seed, I'm fine if they're coming close to those games and they end up losing. They end up getting knocked out of the playoff hunt. That's fine. If they're hanging between 9 and 10 or 11 in the Eastern Conference, when it's all said and done, and at least they were in those games in March, I'm cool with that. The one thing that does scare me a little bit, though, if they do end up being a playoff team, say an 8th seed, the only thing that scares me is that they pick up that option for Jabari Parker for year two, and he isn't as good as maybe finding a way to package yourself to go get a star. Like, if Jabari Parker is really good this year, talking about 20-plus points per game player, a guy that stayed healthy the entire season, actually has shown us that he can play the three, which both you and I still don't think that he can play there. If he does show us all of that, then fine. Like, that's okay. Like, if we're getting development out of him and he's actually better than advertised, I'm cool with that. But the fact that if they don't make the playoffs, if Parker looks bad, if LaVine is all right but not as good, if Markkanen is good still, that's a pretty good win. But my thing is like, going into next offseason where we have all this cap space, say you don't bring Jabari Parker back, but you don't make the playoffs and you end up in the top five again or the top seven of the lottery, what star is going to want to come here?
A valid question. And that's why I think the Bulls in 2019 free agency are going to miss. I think the backup plan to not getting any of those top tier guys that people keep talking about in 2019, Jimmy, Kawhi, Clay, whoever it may be, Kyrie, Kemba, if you want to throw them in there. They're not going to get any of those guys. And the backup plan that they shove down the throat of the fan base is saying, we believe in Jabari and picking up his option, or God forbid, signing him to a huge multi-year deal. As opposed to what I would prefer to see them do, which is wait out for 2020, 2021. Look, if you can't get the guy you really want and Jabari doesn't show you all that much, you don't have to sign him again. You don't have to pick up the team option. You don't have to sign him to a multi-year deal. If you do the experiment 1 year, you give yourself that out. Don't be afraid to use it. It was obviously a different scenario with LaVine because, you know, he was a big piece of that trade and he was a restricted free agent and he's the guy that you really wanted to believe in, and it was always a part of their plan to keep LaVine and re-sign LaVine to a multi-year deal. It wasn't necessarily always a part of their plan to get Jabari and put him on a 2-year prove it deal. That kind of came out of nowhere. So just because you might not have any other great options in 2019 free agency, and because you are, you know, afraid to not do anything in 2019, it doesn't mean you have to keep Jabari just because.
I think the one question I have for you too, I'm like just a little bit confused because it's tough too to kind of project this, because this could go in, I think, 5, 6, 7 different ways. The one thing that I get caught up on too, and I'm with you, I was there back in April when we were talking about this, back in March, before this Jabari Parker signing happened, before even the LaVine deal was done, I said that I would like to see them be back in the lottery, if not the high lottery, one more year. But you have to get to that top five, and they didn't do that this year. So I guess in order for the Bulls to get to the top five, top seven of the lottery, that means a lot of the guys that you have on this roster didn't play up to expectations last year. So that, I think, worries me more so than the Bulls playing a little bit better next season, maybe getting slightly worse of a lottery pick, maybe between 10 and 14. That it worries me more to be back in the top five. That means a lot of things did not go right on this roster. And that scares me more so than maybe them being a little bit better than expected. Even if it is Parker didn't play well, if LaVine played well and Markkanen played well and Dunn played well, and even if Parker did play well, it's like you can mix four or five of these guys that we're talking about as our core. And I still legitimately feel like if Parker plays well this season, he's going to be a part of this thing, whether you like that or not. To me, it scares me more, and I think you're on a worse path if you go back and you're in the top five or top seven in the lottery. That to me just says that a lot of the young guys that we have on this roster didn't play up to their expectations or to their player development this season. And that would worry me a hell of a lot more than the Bulls winning more games.
I get it that you would rather see the development than a higher lottery pick. I'm saying I disagree. Especially if it comes to a point where late in the season they look like a team that would not make any noise in the playoffs, and if they got to the playoffs, would quickly and easily be bounced in round one. If they come into March, and as you pointed out, they have some games against, as I pointed out, they have some games against some teams that will probably be back in the lottery, and they have some games against some very tough competition in that month of March. If you come into March 1st and look at that schedule, and they are on the fringe of being a one-and-done playoff team, Give me those lottery, give me those ping pong balls all day. And maybe that is the motivation that they would need to say, all right, you know what? This was good, and we saw some things from Markkanen, and Chris Dunn had a better year. What I want to happen, and look, call me a sourpuss and call me a bad sport if you want. I don't buy the Jabari thing. You know how I feel about that. I want this to be a one-and-done experiment that doesn't go well, and they move on. And they try once again to hit in the draft. Because, as we just said, it's hard to get free agents to come here. I don't think any of them are coming in 2019. You moved up 2 years ago to get Lowry. Everybody right now is cautiously optimistic about Wendell. But you have to have as many chances, as many hits as possible in the top of that lottery to get franchise-altering players and talents. I don't think the Bulls are ready to be leaving the lottery quite yet. I don't believe in the core all that much. So, yeah, if they're coming into March and there are a few games below 500, give me losses instead of wins, and we'll try again next year. I don't think it's ridiculous to have that opinion.
I agree with you. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with you feeling that way. I wish I could feel the same way, but I've got to go with what I'm hearing from the front office, because what I want and what they're actually going to do are completely different things. And so I'm just looking at it from the perspective of what the Bulls front office and why they're shaping the roster the way that they're doing it. And that's to set up, like they've said, and I'm it's hard for me to believe everything that they do say. But for the most part, what the Bulls have told us over the last year or 14, 16 months has mostly been true, I feel like. But it's still, I still hold out a lot of skepticism, because they talk about, you know, having flexibility for 2019 and 2020 and signing some of these top free agents or bringing somebody in to ultimately get you over that hump. And I don't know if Parker can do that. I don't know if Parker's that guy, if he's going to be that guy. You don't believe in him. I'm still just kind of on the fence and just sitting here saying, let's wait and see what goes on with him. I just am convinced that they're going to want this team to win more games than maybe ending up in the lottery at the top 10 and giving you those ping pong balls.
And I'm not saying that that's my perspective is the perspective of the front office, where if they're in the hunt come March 1st, even five games back in the hunt, they're going to try to keep winning games instead of tanking, because that's what they want this team to do. They want this team to be competitive. They want to sell at least a couple of playoff home games. They want that. They want to have the proof to say, look at this. Look at this progress we made this year. We're back in the playoffs already with this young core. They want that to happen. I absolutely agree with you there. I'm saying, in my opinion, it is not in their best interest. Their best interest is getting back to the top end of the lottery if they look like a borderline, you know, outside looking in playoff team come March 1st. That's what I'm saying. But absolutely the front office wants them to get back to the playoffs. There's no doubt about that.
I'll be honest with you. With Parker healthy this season, I think that's completely out the window now. If he's healthy the entire season, I just don't see any way that the Bulls are in the top seven of the lottery. That's just my personal opinion, though. I think LaVine's going to be a way better scorer. I think he's going to show people that he's way better than expected. I think Parker, if he stays healthy, is going to be a guy that's going to score 16 to 19 points per game, maybe even 20 points per game again, getting back to that point. Like, you've got two guys that could potentially score 20 points per game on your team, and maybe even three guys if you want to include Markkanen in that as well. Like, that doesn't equal a formula which puts you back into the top five or back into the top seven of the lottery. So
maybe not. I think you're overlooking the fact that there are going to be fewer tanking teams this season than there were last season.
That's true. That's true, too. I didn't even think about that. So that's a good point. Like we said, though, at the beginning, I think this can go a million different ways, and it's hard to project right now. But, yeah, looking at their season going forward, I think regardless of the schedule, regardless of the wins and the losses, I think the most important thing for you and I, at least watching next year, is to make sure that we see multiple improvements from Dunn, Levine, Markkanen, Parker, and Carter. I think if you get somewhat of a development from all of those guys in various levels, I think we're good, and I don't really care where the wins and losses get you at this point in the season. If they're at the back end of the lottery, okay, I don't care. I'm not that surprised. If they're in the playoffs, I'll be a little bit surprised, but I'm not mad. And if they're in the top five or the top seven of the lottery, I'll be a little bit frustrated, but not too mad.
I mean, I guess the ideal scenario is that the Bulls look good enough to be to have optimism moving forward about the young core. You know, whether or not you want to throw Jabari in there is up to you. But across the board, the young core makes some steps. They look better. Maybe they win a few more games than they did last year. They're back in the lottery and they get lucky again. You know, they got unlucky last year. If they had lost the tiebreaker to the Kings, they would have ended up in seventh instead of sixth and would have vaulted from seventh to sixth, or from seventh to second, I should say. So, you know, maybe with the increased odds even down towards the, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th of the lottery, maybe ideal situation is that the Bulls don't look awful and don't actually earn themselves a top 3 or top 5 lottery spot, but they get lucky again, right? Can we come to a mutual agreement that that is the best case scenario?
Yeah, I think we could come to that. I'm just telling you, man, I don't think this draft class is nearly as good as everybody thinks it's going to be. It's going to maybe mirror more so the 2013 draft than last season's draft. So I just want you to realize, and I want Bulls fans to realize, that people who want them back in the lottery, like I said, I wanted them in the top five last year, and it was a failure if they didn't get there in the top five. Fine, they got Wendell Carter Jr. That looks great. They were on the outside of the top five. Great. Next year, if that's the plan, like if you're trying to get back in the top lottery slots, you need to be there, because outside of those top five guys, I'm sorry, anybody going past that is looking like the 2013 draft. And just for your sake, Bulls fans out there listening, go look at the 2013 draft and you pick out a few players on there and you just go, wow, I can't believe they were taken in the top 10. Cody Zeller being one of them, Alex Len being another, Nerlens Noel, Ben McLemore, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Like, that's the draft we're looking at. I'm sorry, but the 2019 draft class is what we're looking at as far as the 2013 draft goes. So that's, I just want you to be aware of that. Just be aware of that.
I know. And again, so you're saying 2019 draft class is thin compared to 2018. I said that earlier. I agree with you, which is why I think it is, again, in their best interest to be a lottery team with decent odds next year. Because they might not get a player of Wendell Carter Jr.'s caliber at 7 if the Bulls are at 7 again, and certainly not at 10.
So your projection of 32 to 37 wins doesn't necessarily match up to what you're saying right now, though.
I would put myself closer to 32 than 37. I think you and I both agree that we would take the over at 27.5 that it's been set at, but I don't feel great about that, and I certainly would pause before taking the over on 32.5.
And the only way I can see them being back in the top five, top seven, is if somebody gets injured for like long term this season, or if multiple guys get hurt, which is also a factor that we didn't even talk about. We've got two guys coming off of ACL injuries for the first season, having first full healthy seasons. So that's something else to think about, too, as well.
All right, Jordan, let's transition to our second topic of the day. But before we do that, football season is right around the corner. Just in case you haven't been and you are a diehard Bears fan, here in Chicago, you should be checking out our sister show, Locked On Bears. Lauren Cox is doing great work over there as we move from training camp into the preseason NFL football. Regular season football is now less than 4 weeks away. Really exciting stuff. And the football guys on the Locked On Podcast Network have some really cool news. Just want to keep you guys in touch on that. Locked On NFL has become Locked On NFL of Experts. Matt Williamson hosts Locked On NFL and has a brand new lineup for this 2018 football season. Every Monday, it will be the Locked On's local experts on the biggest stories. And then, get this, newly joining the Locked On team, Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus will join every Wednesday episode of Locked On NFL. And ESPN's Mike Sando joining every Thursday. Be sure to follow Locked On NFL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. You will find it there. Locked On NFL has really exciting stuff coming up here in 2018, including both Mike Renner and Mike Sando joining the team. So check that out and check out Locked On Bears as well. I don't know about you, Jordan. I got a bunch of fantasy football drafts coming up. I'm stoked.
Yep, I'm excited. I've been in a league for about 5 years now, and it's a keeper league, so I'm very excited. I was in two leagues last year. Both my teams were very bad, very injury plagued last year. So, I'm looking for Dalvin Cook to come back and have a really, really phenomenal year this year. So he'll be one of my keepers. And same thing with, and I'm looking for Deshaun Watson, who I took way late in the draft, and hopefully he turns around.
That's a solid draft pick.
Yeah, the 12th pick.
That's a good keeper.
12th round. So, yeah, that's...
Deshaun Watson in round 10 is crazy value if he stays healthy.
Cross my fingers on that ACL. It's the year of hoping for the ACL, man.
Man, and there have already been 3 ACL tears in preseason. It's so sad. We got to get rid of preseason football, man. I'm coming around. I know I was giving you a hard time a couple weekends ago about how I was excited to watch Bears preseason football instead of going to Lala, and I stick by that. But we got to shorten the NFL preseason. Too many of these season-ending ACL injuries and meaningless games. It's a bummer.
Yeah, the NFL preseason's trash. It's trash. It's useless. They should have 2 games and then get started with the season.
But I'm still watching it. I watched the entirety of that Bears-Bengals game last Thursday, and I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Were you happy to see Mitch Trubisky run out one series? Like, basically one series?
It was 2 series, but it was like all of 8 plays. No, and I was not pleased. But it still wasn't the first string offense. You know, Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Jordan Howard, they were all out. Tariq Cohen saw a couple of snaps, but he didn't see the ball. I'm not worried.
Speaking of ACL injuries, let's get to the last topic of today's show.
Nice.
And this is interesting, Matt. You brought this to my attention. The guys over at ESPN.com put together a list of some of the best newcomers this year in the NBA, guys that changed teams, and some of the worst newcomers of this summer. And unfortunately, and this is just going to go in line with a lot of the skeptics out there, you probably fall in this same camp too, Jabari Parker is on this list, and he is on the list of worst newcomers of the year. So Carmelo Anthony was the number one on this list, 61 first place votes. Dwight Howard coming in at number 2 with 46 points, 46 first place votes. Jabari Parker, 35 first place votes, coming in third. Lance Stephenson, Rajon Rondo, Kawhi Leonard, and DeMarcus Cousins all following up hit through there. I'm going to let you touch on this first because I know you're the skeptic of Jabari Parker, and looking at the list of the 6 guys that are here, 2 guys in front of him and the guys behind him, what do you have to say, and what do you feel like is the overall consensus about Parker? And I know you're probably going to repeat the same things, but still, to see his name on there is kind of surprising, to be honest.
It's not surprising to me. It makes perfect sense to me because you know how I feel about Jabari. And Marks of ESPN here basically touches on a couple of simple things, which is that it's not so much about the $20 million. Because there is that team option, and it's not a long-term money commitment, but it's about the fit. And that, especially considering that most of us want to believe that Markkanen is the best young piece we have right now to build around, that if you give up on playing Parker at the 3, or if you quickly realize that Parker is not as effective at the 3 than he is at the 4, you know, and this is how Marks phrases it, one thing Fred Hoiberg cannot do is play Markkanen out of position at the expense of Parker playing the 4. And that succinctly sums up the biggest issue I have with the Jabari signing. And it's something that you and I touched on last week when we were talking about Fred's possible rotations and where might guys be playing this season, particularly when it comes to Jabari playing the minutes at the three, and then also trying to find ways to give Jabari minutes at the four. And that is the crux of the argument to me. So no, I was not surprised to see Jabari on this list. And I'll throw it to you with this. To me, it is fairly enlightening to see him. Yes, he is not the number one ranked worst newcomer of the offseason in this ESPN poll, but he is third place behind Carmelo going to Houston. We saw Carmelo at age 33 as an odd fit in OKC have an awful year. He was not effective playing off the ball and playing third fiddle to Paul George and Russell Westbrook. There are going to be similar concerns with Houston and James Harden and Chris Paul. And he just doesn't play defense anymore, and now he is even a year older. So from Houston's perspective, losing Trevor Ariza and Mba Amute and some of those role players and replacing it with an aging Carmelo, who's already kind of voicing his opinion about not wanting to be a bench player, but should probably be a bench player, yeah, that's a pretty risky, risky addition and might pan out to be a bad one. And number two on the list is Dwight Howard, the most widely recognized locker room cancer in the NBA since he left the Orlando Magic, and even in the tail end of his Orlando Magic years. Those are the only two guys who ESPN experts believe were worse newcomer additions to an NBA roster than Jabari Parker to Chicago. So with that, let's hear what you have to say.
I think Lance Stephenson, Rajon Rondo, both guys should be ahead of Jabari Parker. With that said,
I don't.
Are you kidding me? Lance Stephenson?
Rondo is one of the smartest players in the league.
You just drafted Lonzo Ball at number two last year, though.
That doesn't matter.
Lance Stephenson and Rajon Rondo and Michael Beasley should all be a part of this list, and they should be behind Carmelo and Dwight Howard.
Beasley, whatever. But Lance Stephenson, for all the wisecracks, and if you watch Rachel Nichols' interview with LeBron that took place in his school in Akron, asking him about his transition to the Lakers and his Lakers' new teammates, he praised Rondo and Lance because they are guys who just love to compete and love the game of basketball. And, the whole Lance blowing in LeBron's ear thing and that he's been a LeBron instigator all of his career, and that's really what he's known for. The guy's a competitor. You want those instigator guys on your team, not playing against them. It's the same way most people in the NBA felt about Joakim Noah in his prime. And it's the same way that people feel about Rondo. Yeah, the guy's a thorn in your side, and you love him as a teammate. So, no, I don't think that Rondo or Stephenson should be ahead of Jabari on that list.
That's sad, because Lance Stephenson was nearly out of the league before he went back to Indiana and revived his career for 1 year. So, think about that for a second. Joakim Noah and Rajon Rondo have never been nearly out of the league. I know Noah now, but that's after basically broken apart. But Lance Stephenson was nearly out of the league a few years ago. Think about all the teams he bounced around from. And outside of Indiana, he hasn't proved he can play anywhere. So to me, this signing is terrible. It's a terrible signing. And sure, LeBron's going to defend everybody that's on his team. Of course he's going to do that. He did the same thing when Dwayne Wade and Isaiah Thomas went to Cleveland last year at the beginning of the season. Look how that turned out. I'm just saying, man, I think as much as I'm skeptical about Jabari Parker being here in Chicago and having to play the three, I think people are just piling on this guy, and it's to me, I don't think it's a fair advantage, and maybe Parker will play this to his advantage and prove to everybody else that, yeah, he can play the three, yeah, he's going to come out and be healthy, and he isn't one of the worst offseason acquisitions. I just think it's ridiculous to put him ahead of Lance Stephenson, to put him ahead of Rajon Rondo, to not drill the Indiana Pacers for signing Doug McDermott to the most ridiculous contract ever, 3 years, $22 million. Those guys, to me, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think Parker's just getting hammered for the things that we already know is wrong with it. It's a one-year deal, and I know that Bobby Marks had mentioned it's not about financials here. It's more about fit than anything else. But he also cites one.
Yeah, the Lakers are only paying Lance Stephenson like $4.3 million, by the way, on a one-year deal.
To me, though, it makes no sense to have Lance Stephenson a part of your team when you've got guys like Josh Hart, you've got Brandon Ingram, you've got Kyle Kuzma, you've got all these guys that you want to test out and find out where they can play, and you're bringing Lance Stephenson in, who really, do you think Lance Stephenson's going to buy into the idea of coming off the bench and playing behind some of these younger guys?
Yeah.
Same thing with Michael Beasley and Rajon Rondo?
Yes.
All right.
They get to play on a team with LeBron freaking James. I don't think they're going to have a whole lot of complaints about being a bench player.
We'll find out about that. I don't completely agree with that. I think that they're going to get frustrated that they're coming off the bench, and these guys feel like that they should play next to LeBron.
Lance in the latter stages of his career has been a bench guy.
Maybe not so more so Lance Stephenson, but maybe Rajon Rondo and Michael Beasley as well. I don't know. I think those acquisitions are way worse than Jabari Parker's. Looking at one thing that Bobby Marks did say about Jabari Parker, though, which I don't even think needed to be mentioned. Like, if you're Fred Hoiberg, this doesn't even need to be mentioned. It says one thing head coach Fred Hoiberg cannot do is play Markkanen out of position the expense of Parker playing at the four.
I said that. Yeah. And that's good. I said that's the crux of my argument for Jabari. So I don't want him messing with Lowry's development.
And I think that goes without saying, though. So that goes, Fred Hoiberg knows his key to keeping his job is make sure Markkanen turns into a star. That's Fred Hoiberg's key to success here, is if he can get everything he can get out of Markkanen and turn him into a star, Fred Hoiberg's probably going to be more than likely be able to keep his job. So why the hell would that even be mentioned? He's not going to adjust things just for Jabari Parker.
Because you don't think the front office is putting a little bit of pressure on Fred to make Jabari successful? Jabari's the hometown kid that is on this prove-it deal that everybody in Chicago wants to be a wild success? Come on, Jordan, you can't be that blind. You can't be that blind to say that the front office is way more concerned about Fred and his coaching ability and his coaching evaluation this season to be about marketing than it is about making Jabari work. Because if you don't believe that, then you're freaking crazy.
Fred's evaluation this year is, I think, first going to start with marketing. I don't care about Parker. Parker was added for 1 year. We're talking about a one-year deal here. You're saying that you think make or break for Fred Hoiberg is...
Yeah, and Fred's bosses really want Jabari signing to work out. They really want that to work out.
But you haven't heard anything them say that Parker is more important than Markkanen is.
But it's not that they would come out and say that. They wouldn't say that.
How stupid do you have to be to...
It's the fine print, Jordan. He's a Chicago kid. He's
so
a Duke
what?
Product. He's a Bartelstein client. He's everything that they want from a marketing perspective. I've told you this a million times.
He's going to be here long term, though.
It means that they care about him being a success in this prove-it-year season.
Sure, but they care...
They want Jabari to work, and they are going to evaluate Fred as a coach on his ability to make Jabari at the three work, because Jabari at the three working means that you can keep starting Lowry at the four, which is what they want to do.
You're insane if you think Parker is on a higher priority of him working out than Markkanen is.
I didn't say that.
Well, you said that as far as...
Fred
Hoiberg goes.
I said it's darn near equal, that they would love to see Jabari work out just as much as they would like to see Lowry Markkanen take big steps under Fred Hoiberg's tutelage this season.
How is that Fred Hoiberg's fault, though? You're asking him to play a player that doesn't play the three to play the three. I don't understand how that...
The front office believes he can play the three, and they are asking Fred to play him there and make him efficient.
So then
there.
Let John Paxson and Gar Foreman come down and coach the team then, if that's what we're at right now. Because that is just complete idiocracy.
Why?
Because Markkanen is your cornerstone. They've said that over and over and over and over again the last year. Markkanen is your guy, your number one guy. So Fred Hoiberg's job this year is to make sure Markkanen turns into a star, or is still on that path. Parker is, I don't even think Parker is the second most important as far as working out and what Fred Hoiberg's job is.
Jordan, I agree with you there, and you know that. I'm talking about the front office's perspective here. And the front office is paying Jabari $20 million on not a whole lot of a resume. And they would sure like it if Jabari goes out there this season and proves that A, that was a smart call on their point, and B, he can in fact play the three, so that C, they should continue to invest in Jabari. ABC, right there. That's what the front office wants to see. I agree with you that he is not more important than Lowry for this Bulls rebuild. Ideally not more important than Chris Dunn or Zach LaVine or even Wendell Carter. He's a one-year flyer experiment and thus should not be more important than those guys. The front office does not see it that way. The front office really wants Jabari to pan out. And if you don't see that, you're blind.
So what you're telling me is, let's take for example, the first 2.5 months of this season, Markkanen is playing really well at the four. Jabari Parker, not so much at the three. You think the front office is going to come to Fred Hoiberg and say, you know what, maybe you should mix up your lineups a little bit. Maybe try Markkanen at the five and put Parker at the four, and we'll figure out what's going on the wing.
Absolutely, they will have that conversation. Absolutely, they will have that conversation.
That is ridiculous. If they did that, that's just, I would be done being a fan at that point. I don't understand.
Really? That's my breaking point?
Like, literally, you're going to take Markkanen, your cornerstone, the guy that we all think can be the star of this team. I still firmly believe that Markkanen is going to be the number one. When it's all said and done on this team, I think Markkanen is going to be the number one guy in this team. And if you think the front office, just for 1 year, Parker's here 1 year. Yes, they have an option for the second year, but he is here 1 year. I think this is more marketing ploy than anything else to get people excited about Chicago, regardless if Parker works out or not. Like you said, they can let Parker walk after this season, but I don't think that they're going to bend over and break their backs for Parker just to make sure he works here so they can justify picking up his option for next year. I don't think that's relatively true at all.
My sweet summer child, you are closing your eyes to the truth if you don't believe that that will happen at some point this season.
That's ridiculous then. That is the most absurd thing I've ever heard.
So basically what you're saying is that you don't see at any point if Parker, which we both agree, will probably show signs of struggling playing at the three early on, particularly on the defensive end. If he shows signs of struggling and being a square peg in a round hole at three, you're saying you would be shocked and throwing in the towel and being done being a Bulls fan if after that preliminary struggle appears on the court, the front office comes to Fred and said, hey, maybe look at some lineups where we can play Jabari at the four and see how that works. Because if you don't believe that that's a conversation that the front office will have with Fred if Jabari struggles at the three, you're blind. Because, yes, that will happen.
If I'm Fred Hoiberg, I'm looking at them and saying, absolutely not. No, I'm not going to move
Fred Hoiberg's not the one with the power here, is he, Fred? Is he, Jordan?
Then Fred Hoiberg should be fired then. If you're just going to bend over after the fourth season where you've given four different teams and you're Fred Hoiberg's...
He should be fired for following the instructions of his front office? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that Fred Hoiberg should sit there and if they come to him in December and Jabari Parker's not working out the three... If I'm Fred Hoiberg, I'm looking at them and saying, no. You guys wanted Parker here. You wanted him to play the three. He is going to play the three for the entire season. I'm not going to risk Markkanen's development just because we want to get a look at Parker for two and a half more months and decide whether or not we're going to pick up that option. If we're picking up that option, if he can't play the three, why would they want to push him to play the four and then try to pick up his option? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
You forget who we're talking about. You just said that doesn't make any sense, and you forget who we're talking about, Jordan. We're talking about the Bulls front office.
I'm getting mad here in August before any of this happens. And like,
I have been the devil's advocate guard packs defender on this show for a time. It's not a role that I embrace or relish, but it is a role that has to be played, and I give them credit where credit is due. But let's remind ourselves that we have seen this Bulls front office make more head-scratching moves in the past.
So you really think Fred Hoiberg's that big of a pushover?
Yes! Absolutely he is! Why wouldn't he be? He is their yes man. The guy who wasn't a pushover, Tom Thibodeau, who when they came down and wanted to sit in on his practices and give him some advice on who should play how many minutes in his rotation, and Fred and Tib said, hey, why don't you go F yourselves? They kicked Tom out of town! And they hired Fred, a nice, furry, soft on the outside, soft on the inside yes man, who is going to be a great guy for communication, a.k.a. we're going to tell Fred what to do and he's going to do it. And that is why Tibbs is gone and that is why Fred is here. So yes, I do think Fred is that much of a pushover. And if you don't, I think you're wrong.
Well, that's dumb. That's just straight up dumb then. Then John Paxson and Gar Foreman should come down and coach this team. Like, what's the point of having Fred Hoiberg then? Like, at this point?
To be a yes man. That is why he was hired in the first place.
So then you don't believe he can be a good NBA coach at all. You just feel like Fred Hoiberg is in a filler place until his contract is up, and that no matter what he thinks is good for the team on the floor, he's just going to listen to whatever John Paxson and Gar Foreman and anybody up in that front office tells him to do, and he's just going to do that?
More or less, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Is it?
That is absolutely ridiculous. It really is. They're not going to sacrifice the player development of Lauri Markkanen just to appease Jabari Parker.
I dude, you, Jordan, you're saying the same thing. You're saying the same thing over again, telling you, yes, they will.
Well, yes, we can disagree on that one, because that would just be the most idiotic thing in the entire world. You set a dumpster fire, light the entire United Center on fire at that point, because there's no point in playing basketball if you're going to do that. If you're literally going to take the guy that you think is going to be your cornerstone, after you've said this multiple times to the fan base, and I know whatever the history tells us, but to do that, just, I don't know. I think you're conjuring up a conspiracy theory about this front office.
Oh, my gosh, Jordan. When has the Bulls front office ever told us something and then turned around and done the exact opposite? Gee golly, I'm struggling to come up with examples.
Yes, I wasn't born yesterday. I know that they've done that in the past, Matt. I can't buy into the fact that Fred Hoiberg would go into the office of John Paxson, Gar Foreman, sit there and say, you know what, fine, he's going to be here for three more months, let's see what he's got at the four. Like, then you fall into multiple problems, Matt.
I know all of those problems.
So you're going to have four guys on the, you're going to have four centers on the bench then. You're going to have four centers on the bench. You're going to have Ashiq, you're going to have Lopez, you're going to have Carter, and you're going to have Felicio all coming off the bench?
I don't know what to tell you, buddy. All I'm telling you is that if Parker's...
The front office is not that stupid, man. Come
they're
on.
Gonna, they're
going to... As much shit as we give them, they're not that
dumb. If he struggles mightily
dumb.
At the three, they will talk to Fred about finding ways to play him at the four. I guarantee you.
Then he'll have to come off the bench. Plain and simple. If he's going to do that, then he's going to have to come off the bench.
I'm just telling you how I see it, man.
All right. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up. We want to hear about the conversation that maybe you guys want to touch on. Let's hear from some Bulls fans. What do you think about the conversation that we just had in the last 40 minutes? We want to hear from you. So 331-979-1369. Drop us a voicemail or text message. We'll be doing mailbag on Wednesday. We do it every single Wednesday. Once again, follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.